Brought to you by Bose, presenting their most advanced pilot headset ever, the Bose A20 Aviation Headset. It provides acclaimed noise reduction, along with a comfortable fit, clear audio, and Bluetooth connectivity.
Richard Bach is best known as the author of Jonathan Livingston Seagull, published in 1970, but he's also known among aviators as the author of several books about flying, books like Stranger to the Ground, Biplane, and A Gift of Wings. These days, Bach lives a reclusive life on a small island in the Pacific Northwest, but recently he started to reconnect with the aviation world by blogging at his website, richardbach.com. Hi, this is Mary Grady for AvWeb, and today I'm talking with Richard Bach. I was wondering, Richard, how did you first get interested in flying?
I got started in aviation as absolute... No, it's not coincidence. There's a principle of coincidences. And my first introduction to that principle was in my first and only year of college. I took a course in archery in order to do as little physical work as possible. Standing next to me on the archery range was this guy that I'd struck an acquaintance with. And just as he was about ready to launch an arrow at the target, a little airplane flew over, and he stopped and he looked up at the airplane. And something happened in my mind. This is Long Beach, California. There are lots of little airplanes. And I said, nobody would look up at an airplane unless they have some kind of special interest. And the words just popped into my mind. I said, I'll bet you've got an airplane, and I'll bet you're looking for someone to come out and wash and polish that thing. And in return, you'll teach him how to fly. And Bob Keacher looked at me, and he said, how did you know? This was in 1954, and at that time, when you became an instructor, you first became an LFI, a limited flight instructor. You had to put through 5 students successfully to get their ticket, and then you'd become a CFI. And he had just gotten his LFI, and he was looking for guinea pigs. And I was right next to him, squeak, squeak, on the archery range. That's the whole reason I took that college year. Was to find Bob Keach, was to learn to fly. I washed and polished an Alaskan 8E, has about 37 acres of aluminum on it, and I polished that beautifully. And sure enough, every weekend, we got 50 minutes. And I absolutely loved flying.
So you learned to fly, then later joined the Air Force, and then when you returned to civilian life, continued to fly. But your real dream was to be a barnstormer. Can you tell us about that?
I always felt that I had been born too late in aviation. All the adventurous stuff that individuals could do was done. And then I realized, hey, that's my decision. A, when I'm born, and B, whether or not I'm too late. The fields are still there. They're still all through the Midwest. They're still planting soybeans and hay and corn. Why not just fly over those fields when you find a hay field, land in it, if it's close to town, and hop passengers? They did that then. Why can't I do it now? So I did that. Took the biplane. I had a Parks P2A, two-place front cockpit, and I did it. At first, I practiced, of course, landing in a friend's hay field, and then I pushed the limits and said, okay, what's the real minimum that I can go safely? And most of the fields in the Midwest are 1,320 feet long. But when I was barnstorming, when I was going to be carrying passengers, I'd look for a field where the farmer had taken out the fence between, and he put two 1,320s back-to-back, and there was a 2,600-foot hay field. And if that was close to town, and if I had the farmer's permission, and if there was a gate in the fence, I could land there, put up my little sign, fly $3, fly. And sure enough, people would come out. They didn't care that it was... whatever it was, 1968 or 1974 when I was doing that. Your first passenger, when you come down, they get out of the airplane and they are ecstatic because they've overcome fear. That's so important when you're taxiing out. And it's rough ground, the hay fields, you taxi out and you see their fingers gripping the combing of the front cockpit really tight. And you know what they're thinking, oh my God, I'm going to die in this old plane. But... and then it gets worse when you push the throttle forward and everything gets really bumpy and noisy. And then all of a sudden, woof, you're in the air, and all of it, there's this just magic happens, and you watch the fingers relax on a carpet combing, and you see they're looking down their farm, and oh my God, it is beautiful up here. And I give this gift that so many people in little towns have never had, to be up in the air in a little airplane and to overcome that fear. It's a great feeling when they get down. And of course, it's a great feeling for you. There is this kind of tradition in our country, and we can let it die, or individuals, we can say, hey, I'm going to go out. I'm looking for hayfield. Wonderful people in this country, and they really welcome you. At least that was my experience.
So you would advocate for the return of barnstorming as a career choice then for pilots?
Absolutely. As a career choice I would have a hard time charging what the price is, what the ride is really worth. But there's at some level, you can absolutely survive on it. And there are times there were times back then when I just got so cocky and so confident that I'd leave home with a dime in my pocket, 10 cents, and a full tank of gas, and I knew sometime before I ran out of fuel, I was going to find a field and find somebody who was interested in flying, and I would be able to go on. And sometimes I'd be taking off in the rain. And no, okay, it's raining, but still somebody somewhere down there is going to come out, because here's this old airplane, and they can't resist the sight and the sound. And that was true, and over again, take off with no idea where you're going to land. So yes, I would advocate it. For those of those who have that same wistful feeling, I'd like to experience what my ancestors in aviation. I want to know their life. And for me, it was sleeping under the wing was a big deal. I really liked that. Then I flew with an old barnstormer with Jack Brown, and who had done it in the 30s, and he said, hey, all the barnstormers didn't sleep under their wings. We stayed in some of the best hotels in town. I said, Jack, I don't want to hear that. I want to sleep in the wing. That's my kind of barnstormer.
And I noticed that just recently you started writing a blog at richardbach.com. I wonder what other writing projects you have in the works.
Oh, I've got a book started. In fact, a book that's been working on me for 5 years, and finally I just realized how to do it. So I just started at the same time, after I don't know how many years, RichardBach.com has just been a blank page. It just had a picture on the page of a book, and you click on it and nothing would happen. Just recently we actually started that site up again, and it's coming alive. So now I've got this choice between, do I work on the book or do I do this website, which is a lot of fun because there's so many people out there who are interested in the same things that I'm interested in, and a lot of flyers out there. And we don't realize the size of our family when we get into something like flying. We kind of automatically take our place in this huge family around the world.
So you're still actively flying, right? What kind of flying do you do these days?
My flying now is just for sheer, just touching the sky and just remembering who I am. And flying is such a great reminder that who we are is spirit. And our view as a spirit is not limited by gravity. We are not chained to the ground. And to be able to demonstrate that, to get in an airplane and fly somewhere, or in the amphib, to go out and land on some quiet little lake, no tower, no frequencies, no runways. You look at the surface and you drag it. Is there driftwood or logs or anything floating on there? And if it's okay, you go down and you land and you shut the engine down and you're floating on the surface. It is absolutely dead quiet. And there's just you and the wind and the trees, and that's the kind of flying that I really love to do. And it is, you know, it's been a long time since I've even been into a big airport anymore. So I watch my life. I see how flying, which has always been part of my life, see how that is morphing into that aspect of flying that I most enjoy, low and slow for me right now. I'm always like low and slow. There is this just wonderful sense of being off the ground for the sake of flying itself. And that has been the eternal thing for me. I've gone through all these other kinds of flying, but the one that stayed with me from beginning to right now is simply the sense of being off the ground, in the air, looking down at this little planet that we all share. And there's an unending fascination in flight for me, and I'm never going to stop flying.
Well, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Marianne, you are so welcome. Thank you.
Brought to you by Bose, presenting their most advanced pilot headset ever, the Bose A20 Aviation Headset. It provides acclaimed noise reduction along with a comfortable fit, clear audio, and Bluetooth connectivity.